Chapter 3.
As she led me upstairs to the room she had chosen for me, Zillah told me to be very quiet and hide the candle, because her master never let anyone stay in that room. I asked the reason, but she said she did not know. She had only lived in the house a year or two, she said. So many strange things went on in the house that she no longer asked about them. When I was alone in the room, I looked around. The only furniture was a chair, a wardrobe, and a large oak case with windows in it, like a carriage. I looked inside it and found a bed and, above the bed, a window. On the windowsill was a pile of books. I opened the door of the oak case and climbed in with my candle. When I had shut the door behind me, I felt safe from Heathcliff or anyone else. As I placed my candle on the windowsill, I noticed that it was covered with writing, scratched in the paint. It was a name repeated in all kinds of letters, large and small. Catherine Earnshaw, sometimes changing to Catherine Heathcliff or Catherine Linton. Feeling sleepy, I leaned my head against the window and read and reread the names until my eyes closed. But then I saw white letters like ghosts in the dark, and the air swarmed with Catherines. I woke up and realized that my candle was starting to burn the cover of one of the books. I opened the book. It was a Bible. The name Catherine Earnshaw was written on the flyleaf with a date of 25 years ago. I looked at all the other books one by one. Catherine's library was well chosen and well used, but the books had not been used in the usual way. She had written a diary in the margins of the books. Every bit of blank space left by the printer was filled with Catherine's childish handwriting. On one page, I found, to my delight, an excellent caricature of Joseph. I began to feel a keen interest for the unknown Catherine, and so read a little of her diary.
An awful Sunday. I wish my father were back again. Hindley is being horrible to Heathcliff. H and I are going to rebel. We began this evening. Joseph had made us listen while he gave a sermon 3 hours long. When we came down, Hindley said, "What? Have you finished already?" He had been enjoying himself by the fire, kissing Francis and talking nonsense. H and I were going to play, but Joseph said, "Shame on you. Your father was only buried yesterday, and you want to play. You are evil children. Sit down and read a good book and think of your souls." He gave me a pious text to read, but I picked it up and threw it into the dog kennel, and I told him I hated a good book. Heathcliff kicked his book into the same place. Then what a fuss! "Master Hindley," cried Joseph, "look what those evil children have done." Heathcliff says that we should steal some food and go running on the moors and stay there all day. I like the idea. We cannot be damper or colder out there in the rain than we are here.
I suppose they did go, for the next sentence was on a new subject.
"Hindley has made me cry so much that my head aches. Poor Heathcliff. Hindley calls him a vagabond and won't let him sit with us or eat with us any more. He says that I must not play with Heathcliff. If I do, he says he will throw Heathcliff out of the house. He blames our father, how dare he, for treating Heathcliff too liberally. Hindley swears that he will reduce Heathcliff to his right place."
I began to feel sleepy once more, and my eye wandered from manuscript to print. At the top of the page it said, 70 times 7 and the first of the 71st. A pious discourse by the Reverend Jabez Branderham. I must have fallen asleep then. What can explain the terrible dream I had? It must have been the result of poor digestion or bad temper. I dreamt that it was morning and I was going home through the snow with Joseph as my guide. He kept telling me that I should have brought a pilgrim's staff, that I would never get into the house without one. He waved his thick walking stick at me proudly, and so I understood that was what he meant by pilgrim's staff. At first, I thought it absurd that I should need such a weapon to get into my own house, but then I realized that we were going to hear the famous Jabez Branderham preach a sermon on the 70 times 7. We came to the chapel. I have passed it really in my walks. It is a damp, gloomy, dilapidated place. However, in my dream, Jabez preached, good God, what a sermon! It was divided into 490 parts, each as long as a normal sermon, and each discussing a different sin. Some of these were sins I had never thought about before. In my dream, I was terribly tired and bored by the sermon. Finally, I rose to my feet and accused Jabez of the sin that no Christian need pardon, the sin of boring us all to death. But Jabez turned to me and accused me of the first of the 71st. He called upon his congregation to execute the Lord's judgment upon me. With that, the entire congregation attacked me with their pilgrim staffs. I tried to take Joseph's staff from him so I could defend myself, but the old man was too strong for me. At that point, much to my relief, I woke up. The branch of a tree was tapping against the window in the wind. I went back to sleep and dreamt even more disagreeably than before, if that is possible. I dreamt I was awake in the oak case. I could hear the wind outside and the tapping of the branch. The tapping annoyed me so much that I decided to stop it. I tried to open the window, but could not. I broke the glass with my fist and stretched my hand out to break off the branch, but instead my fingers closed around a little ice-cold hand. The intense horror of nightmare overcame me. I tried to withdraw my arm, but the little hand clung to me, and a most melancholy voice sobbed,
"Oh, let me in! Let me in!"
"Who are you?" I asked, still struggling to free myself.
"Catherine Linton,"
replied the voice. Why did I think of Linton? I had read Earnshaw 20 times for every Linton.
"I have come home. I was lost on the moor."
In the darkness, I could see a child's face looking through the window. Terror made me cruel, and since I could not free my arm from its grip, I pulled its wrist onto the broken glass of the window and rubbed it back and forth until blood ran down and soaked the bedclothes. Still it cried,
"Let me in,"
and maintained its grip. "How can I? Let me go if you want me to let you in." The fingers relaxed. I snatched my hand back through the hole, piled the books up in front of it, and stopped my ears so that I would not hear those dreadful cries.
"Go away!" I shouted. "I will not let you in, not if you beg for 20 years.
"It is 20 years,
cried the voice.
"I've been a lost child for 20 years.
Then I heard a faint scratching outside, and the pile of books moved forwards as though pushed from behind. I screamed aloud.
"Oh!"
Unfortunately, the scream was real. Someone ran into my bedroom. I saw his light flickering, but he could not see me.
"Is anyone here?"
he whispered. I recognized Heathcliff's voice and thought it best to confess my presence at once, so I opened the door of the oak case to get out. The first creak of the door opening startled him like an electric shock. He dropped his candle and had difficulty picking it up again.
"It is only your guest, sir," I said, wishing to spare him the humiliation of showing his cowardice further. "I had a terrible nightmare and screamed in my sleep. I'm sorry I disturbed you."
"Oh, the devil take you, Mr. Lockwood," cried
Heathcliff, putting his candle down on a chair because his hand was shaking.
Who put you in this room?
He asked, crushing his fingernails into his palms and grinding his teeth to stop the trembling.
Who was it? I'll throw them out of the house.
It was your servant, Zilla, I replied, and she deserves to be thrown out. She must have known that the place was haunted. It is swarming with ghosts.
Well, go back to bed, Mr. Lockwood, but don't scream again. Nothing could excuse that noise unless you were having your throat cut.
If the little devil had got in through the window, she probably would have strangled me.
Who do you mean?
Asked Heathcliff. Catherine Earnshaw, or Catherine Linton, or whatever her name was. She told me she had been walking on the moors for 20 years. The wicked little soul.
How dare you talk that way to me?
Thundered Heathcliff savagely.
God, he is mad to speak so.
And he struck his forehead with rage. At first I felt offended by this, but then I took pity on him. He seemed so powerfully affected, and told him more about my dream. Meanwhile, he sat in the oak case, so that I could no longer see his face. But I could tell from his breathing and the movement of his arm's shadow on the wall that he was weeping.
Mr. Lockwood,
he said at last.
Go and wait for me in the corridor.
I went out of the room, but then stopped, for the corridor was dark. He thought I had gone, otherwise he never would have done what he did next. He broke the window open, bursting into tears as he did so.
Come in! Come in!
He sobbed.
Kathy, do come! Oh, do, once more. Oh, my heart's darling. Hear me this time, Catherine, at last.
The ghost, however, gave no sign, and the wind and the snow swirled in through the window and blew out the light.